The government deployed pretty much the whole police force, 16,000 people, right across the country.
As the investigation into the attack on actor Jussie Smollett continues, the focus shifts to whether Smollett may have staged the incident.
Police detained two men identified as the shadowy figure seen on surveillance video, two Nigerian brothers who are friends with Smollett. And reportedly they've told police that Smollett paid them to stage the attack.
There's Jim Roop. On Wall Street, U.S. markets are closed today for President's Day. I'm John Trout.
Hey, Amy, did you know the Honda Dream Deal sales event is literally happening right now, where you can literally get great deals on certified pre-owned Hondas?
Literally? I don't trust that word anymore ever since my coworker Jerry told me he could literally eat 1,000 burritos.
Well, that's literally impossible, but there is literally a Honda Dream Deal sales event happening right now. And Honda is KBB.com's 2018 best value brand. Seriously.
Visit HondaCertified.com to find the Honda that's right for you. With 1.49% APR for well-qualified buyers on select models.
Based on 2018 brand image awards from Kelley Blue Book, visit KBB.com for information.
Indeed knows it's hard to find qualified candidates when you're hiring.
It's like finding a unicorn.
But when you post your job on Indeed, it's easy to find people with the skills you need.
Nurse practitioner, 4+ years experience, acute care certification.
Indeed has a huge pool of amazing candidates and screener tools that help you find your most qualified applicants.
Whoa, an entire short list of unicorns.
Now, get a $50 credit to give your first job posting premium placement at Indeed.com/credit. Terms, conditions, quality standards, and usage limits apply. Additional terms online.
Mixed emotions in Washington fuel President Trump's national emergency declaration.
President Trump says there's a crisis along the southern border.
We're talking about an invasion of our country with drugs, with human traffickers.
Democratic Representative Adam Schiff is among those who disagree with the president, saying an emergency declaration was unnecessary.
If we give away, if we surrender the power of the purse, which is our most important power, there will be little check and no balance left. It'll not be a separation of powers anymore, just a separation of parties.
I'm John Lawrence reporting.
Japanese Prime Minister Abe is keeping quiet over whether he nominated President Donald Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize. He did not deny it in his country parliament or on social media. Speculation is Abe nominated Trump and sent him a copy of the letter. I'm John Trout.
This story is called The Ugly Truth About Timeshare. If you think you've done your family a favor by buying a timeshare, you need my help. Hello, I'm Chuck McDowell, CEO and founder of Wesley Financial Group. 10 years ago, I started helping folks cancel their timeshare contracts, and in the process started what's now called the timeshare cancellation industry. Timeshare is the only thing that you can buy that you can't tell me how much it's going to cost or when it's going to end. When you buy a timeshare, you give them a blank.
Today, business happens here. Here and virtually anywhere. Because today, innovative companies are reinventing the way business happens, and they need people who can keep up with the expertise and technology to get packages to over 150 million delivery points. So, who can help you deliver the future of commerce? The United States Postal Service. See why we deliver more e-commerce packages to homes than anyone at usps.com/future.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Winter weather advisory till 10 o'clock this morning. Freezing rain, freezing drizzle ending as rain showers remaining mostly cloudy today. 35 to 40. Mostly clear, breezy tonight. 15 to 20. And mostly sunny, low 30s tomorrow. On Wednesday, considerable clouds. Snow developing near 32. Then freezing rain on Thursday, becoming rain ending. Becoming partly sunny during the afternoon, 37 to 43. Well, instead of slipping and sliding this winter, float your way to Long Island, New York, aboard the Port Jeff Ferry. There's never any snowdrifts or black ice on Long Island Sound. Call the Port Jeff Ferry at 888-443-3779. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackman on 1490 WGCH.
The following show has paid WGCH a broadcasting fee, and the opinions expressed during the show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this President's Day edition of Camillo's Corner. I'm Fred Camillo, along with Joe Pell, Joe Pellegrino, Noah Roth, and Teddy Roosevelt. Good morning, Joe. Good morning, Noah.
Hi, Freddie. How you doing today?
Hanging in there. How about you, Noah?
Ah, doing well.
So, yeah. It's President's Day.
Oh.
I'll start it off to give you guys, since I'm just throwing it at you now.
Okay.
Your top four presidents, okay? Noah, I'll start it out just
because
I'm asking
the
question.
Time now.
I have to go with TR because he's right next to me.
So funny you should say that. He's one of my four.
Okay, so you're a quarter of the way there.
All right.
I got to go with James K. Polk, the man who said he would serve one term in the 1840s and said he would get about four things done, and he got all four done and did not run again. Died 3 months after he left office, but history judged him very well.
Okay, he was not on my list.
Yeah, he's not on anybody's list. He's on my list. That's about it. So James K. Polk would be number two.
Okay.
Number two. Obviously, Ronald Reagan.
Interesting. Okay.
Whose wake I attended in 2004. My all-time favorite, the first president I cast a ballot for. And, you know, this could go, I mean, obviously Lincoln's on everybody's list. And he's, you know, that's almost an automatic. It's like Jackie Robinson and Babe Ruth, you know, retire their numbers. You know, it's just, they're done. So, I mean, that to me, it's an auto. I'm not even going to use that or Washington because they set the, Washington certainly set the standard as father of our country. So I'm going to go with, I got to throw one Democrat in there, Noah. Harry Truman.
Oh, I like okay. that one.
Yeah, I like that. If you read the Devitt McCullough book, if you don't
I did.
Know, yeah, what it,
brilliant work, right? And his life is so fascinating.
Very Truman to this day fascinates me, and
yeah.
He's from another era.
What is it? What is it about his character that you're attracted to, Freddie?
I like the fact that self-made man, never went to college, a veteran, but when he was went to business and was a haberdasher, and he went bankrupt, and when he left the presidency, and he was sort of an accident as president. He paid people back. And when they wanted to put him on corporate boards, he refused. He said, you don't want me. You want the office of the presidency.
Yeah.
And he could have made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so and he moved back to the house he grew up in Independence, Missouri. So I admire the guy. I really do. I don't think he gets enough credit.
Yeah. I think, you know, so as you're talking, his character – He had what I would say, you know, was intrinsic values.
Yes.
He lived by them. And yet he did something else. You know, he did bridge being a politician in those days from where he was from was with the old backroom deciders of who did what
the
for patronage.
The penny gas machine.
Yeah, right? And so, but the other thing is he didn't lose its integrity. And I think that that's a really interesting quality that he had between feeling like he was always going to do the right thing, yet he had to do it within the context of he wanted to succeed. He wanted to have a job. He wanted to become a congressman.
Yeah, you know, really just a fascinating, accomplished guy from another era, another time.
Yeah.
Almost as if it's mythical story-like because if you were looking to make up the story to write a book of a president – he'd be the last guy. He'd be the last story.
Right.
You wouldn't think. He wouldn't even be a thought.
Right.
Yet here he is, a former president, a significant former president at a historic and really important time. And not only in the United States history, but in world history.
Well, you know, he made some decisions that, you know, we're still talking about to this day. And obviously the decision to use the atomic bomb on Japan. That's got to be one of the biggest decisions that he made at that time.
I know in academia they criticize him for that, but and the argument is, well, you know, if he dropped a bomb in an empty island, that would have shown them the power of the destruction of the bomb. I disagree with that because remember he dropped the first one in Hiroshima, and there was no surrender. He had to drop a second bomb, and the estimates were an invasion of Japan by American forces would have cost possibly a million American lives.
Right.
I think he did the right thing. It's a horrible decision to have to make.
Right.
But I think he did the right thing.
Interesting. Noah, what are your four?
Thank you.
Okay.
I have
have a couple, but, you know, I mean, you're like, oh, you know, you can't say Washington, so okay. I gotta think a little bit more.
And Casey Stengel doesn't count, no.
Yeah.
So I hate to say it, but I have to go with Lincoln as my number one choice. And I think when you think of the extraordinary times under which he was president, and you couldn't, you know, we think sometimes, you know, we got tough times today. It's nothing compared to the fact that you have a country divided, that people are actually killing each other, right, over these issues of slavery, absolutionists, states' rights. And Lincoln has to come in, and he has to tread a line of figuring out, how do I persevere? How do I make this come together on a very important principle? What's a democracy? And is a democracy going to hold, or is a minority going to at any time say, we're out of here because we don't get our way? That's a fascinating question. And the willingness to persevere through horrible circumstances of young people dying and committing it, the country, to a course of action that many times people wanted to just say, enough, we're out of here, let's just stop it. And yet he didn't. And so I look at him as an incredibly thoughtful, insightful person who had empathy, and yet he had the steel of determination to follow a course of action which was important for ultimately the country today, even though it's still taken over 100 years, more than 100 years, to still try to work through the underlying causes of dissatisfaction in big parts of this country.
The great points, and also what people forget about Lincoln is he not only had those external factors to deal with, internally he had a cabinet full of people who were his rivals, who he put, they wanted his job,
right?
And I think Doris Kearns Goodwin wrote a book, Team of Rivals,
right?
And so, you know, that one of these underground organizations, they say keep your friends close but your enemies closer, right? Well, he really did that. He was the original one who did that. He put them in his cabinet,
right?
So, fascinating guy. I'm reading another book right now about leadership, and he's one of the four presidents in it, and learning some things that I didn't know about him. But Lincoln will never tire of his example and his legacy. And my friend Lou Lehrman, who lives in Greenwich, former candidate for governor of New York State, founder of Rite Aid Drugstore, just a wonderful, wonderful man, is a Lincoln scholar. And every year he does the Lincoln Award. And I had the pleasure of, used to go to New York City every, I think it was in April, and then once in Richmond, Virginia, I drove down to see, they honor an author. Every year there's many books written on Lincoln. And one year, each year they pick somebody that's the Lincoln scholar. Mm. And you get to hear them speak. And Lou Lehrman is probably the person to talk to when it comes to all things Lincoln, and he still today writes on Lincoln. So if you ever see Lou Lehrman, grab his ear, because he is unbelievable, a wealth of knowledge on Abraham Lincoln.
He should give a talk at the library. I mean, that's such a great venue on Sunday afternoons. They do so many things there.
Lou would be great.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, he really would.
On a little side note there, there was a book published, I think, 2 years ago called Lincoln and the Bardo, which is a fictitious work, but it's a really fascinating work of literature. Because Lincoln's son, you know, died when he was in he was devastated. But he had this in the middle of the war. And the work is a fictitious work about his son being in the grave and Lincoln visiting him and the whole experience.
Well, throughout his life, he battled depression.
Yeah.
Throughout his life, even before he was president. So, and people also may or may not know, he lost his first few elections.
Right.
Right before the ascending to the presidency. So Lincoln's a good choice. 2, 3, and 4.
Well, Teddy Roosevelt was strong because of what he did and the man and the character that he was. And I think he just had a great spirit. You know, he everything, the national parks.
You just smile when you see his name, right?
But he was a prodigious writer. He was like, I can't believe the guy ever slept a day in his life because he's just constantly doing things. But he had a positive attitude, and he was a progressive. And he was willing to take on people of his own social background, let's say. When he thought they were wrong.
And a conservative man with progressive views. I mean,
exactly.
It can be done.
Right. And you said Truman. I'm with you on there. If I had a fourth, who's the fourth?
Not Polk. Come on.
No, it's not Polk. I'm really stretched for the fourth. I don't know enough about it. I hate to say it. The other Roosevelt is also very fascinating because, in some respects, people's character come to the forefront when they're really challenged. And actually, I know who I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about Lyndon Johnson. Mm-hmm. Lyndon Johnson, I think to this day, is tarred with what happened with the Vietnam War and his commitment to it. But what's fascinating about Johnson is he was willing to go forward with civil rights legislation and the Voting Rights Act, which is the single most important act, I think, that really took place in my lifetime. And knowing full well that he was giving away the South to the Republicans, that it would be the death of the Democratic Party. And yet he did something where I think he had the conviction because he finally had obtained the highest office of power, and he fulfilled it. Robert Caro has written four volumes on Johnson.
Great writer.
And he's working on the last, and I keep waiting for it, and I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm waiting. But it's a study of power. And Johnson is a fascinating person to understand what it took as a skill when he was a Senate majority leader and the master of the Senate to corral people to get to a resolution to get something done. And he lived through a very, very difficult era.
Yeah.
You're talking about civil rights movements. You're talking about Vietnam War. You're talking about the women's liberation movement. You're talking about incredible unrest when you think about the protests that were taking place on campuses, on the streets of this country, and how divided we were as a nation.
Well, I think it, even though he died in 72, 4 years after he left office, I think it killed him because it looked at how he aged. And I think that the White House really does take its toll on people.
Well, you know, his career was, he was just stymied is not the right word, but he was challenging, and or Kennedy challenged him for the presidential nomination back in 1960.
No love lost between those two, that's for sure.
Well, no, because all of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes this young Robert, and he thought he had it all wrapped up by being the majority leader of the Senate, and he had all the votes in the party, but he lost. And it's interesting that Kennedy picked him out of a very prudent course of action, which is I want to win, and therefore I need him to carry Texas.
Which is what Ronald Reagan did with George H.W. Bush, who were not the best of friends, two very different philosophies and backgrounds, and they ended up becoming very good friends, which unfortunately for Kennedy and Johnson, it was too, they did not become great friends, but of course it was cut short anyway. So that, you know, it may not have worked out like the Reagan-Bush but they were also very different people, too.
Well, Johnson went into a very deep depression. He was totally isolated by the Kennedys. I mean, he had no portfolio. He was, like, left in his own little office and never was brought in on anything. Well, Bay of Pigs, it didn't matter. He was not involved.
Famously said, or infamously said, right, maybe it was like a week before the tragic assassination of the president, he said, "My future is behind me." Remarking to somebody about his future prospects, because Kennedy was a young man and he was certainly going to run for re-election in 64, probably going to win. Although if he had not been assassinated, it would not have been the landslide that Johnson had over Barry Goldwater. The country was just not in the mood to switch. And also, poor Barry Goldwater was defined before right out of the gate as being an extremist and a nut and would blow the world up, which was not true, obviously.
Right.
And he was the victim of one of the dirtiest commercials of all time.
Right.
It was so bad it was pulled, the Daisy commercial.
Oh, yeah.
You ever
notorious.
See that?
No, never seen those.
It was on a Sunday night, and it was right before the election, a couple weeks maybe, and a little girl's in the field, and she's picking a daisy, and you hear what sounds like Barry Goldwater saying 10, 9, 8, and then there's the mushroom cloud, and they just then said President Johnson, you know, reelect. You know, it was a horrible commercial.
I'll have to YouTube it,
but
it's there.
But it was it was very effective.
Yeah,
but it was bad. So bad they pulled it.
Yeah.
So the last thing about Johnson, when you think about it, is when Kennedy is assassinated, he has to instantaneously pull things together. so that there's no – you minimize chaos in the country. And he rose to the occasion because his whole life was trained to understand the levers of power, mm-hmm. how to present, how the media would look at things, and what do I have to do to show that I am actually in control. And you're doing this in the middle of the Cold War. And you're doing it with this fear of not knowing if a weapon or a missile is going to go off. You can't imagine that today. But when you're living it, that was amazing. So I have to say, yeah, Johnson, he actually was a really remarkable.
So he'd be number four.
He's number four. Truman was a remarkable president because of the circumstances he was placed in. Teddy Roosevelt, definitely. And definitely Lincoln. Those are my four.
Okay, no, those are good four. No, you still working your four?
Yeah, especially after the nice debate and everything that you guys were able to get into there.
Well, who comes to your mind? You know,
well, one is obviously. I mean, I always like Lincoln and Washington. I mean, one
can't go wrong.
Lincoln,
with those
I think you guys said enough. I mean, Washington certainly the leader. It's funny too, though, because you know you look at, and I was at an art exhibit that was locally here to the area, and it wasn't too far away. We could just say, and to hear the perception of Washington now, especially, you know, by some people out in the public based off, you know, the mindset he had and whether or not he should really be recognized anymore as, you know, for his accomplishments about what he was able to do in his country because he was a racist or this or that. It's always interesting to kind of take, you know, the different presidents and relate, I guess, especially for my generation now, listening to what other people have to say who obviously didn't have a firsthand impact based off what it is, everything else like that. But obviously, if he wasn't the person who he was, where would we be? You know, and what would have
happened? We could have had a king.
What could have been? Right. Who really knows? Who knows? Maybe we could love the color red a little bit more too, right? With the redcoats. Who knows?
Absolutely.
That was one. Lincoln. I was going to say Teddy. And then I was actually – it's kind of funny that you mentioned the time around JFK. I was going to say JFK.
Okay.
So just because of his relations with, you know, obviously the Cold War and everything that was going on over there.
So, good choices.
And then it also changed also like where we are today with even like the Democratic Party. It's a different – everything is just very different obviously.
But he was today JFK would have a hard time getting the nomination because he was a very conservative Democrat.
Right.
But the one thing I take out of this discussion is the number one choice in this room is Teddy Roosevelt.
So congratulations, Teddy. Look at that. That's why you left Reagan home today, right?
Yeah, that's right. Reagan only got two. You didn't pick Reagan. Those are, you can't go wrong with any of them. And I agree. I mean, I wasn't a fan of Johnson or his philosophy, but boy, what a fascinating guy. And I could read books and stories about him all day long. He just fascinates you. And one thing, as you were talking about him seizing the reins of power, the night of the assassination when he was sworn in on the plane,
right.
He had Jacqueline Kennedy come next to him. He wanted the picture of her next to him.
Absolutely.
What a powerful image and a smart thing to do. Who would be have the presence of mind to think, wow, you know what, this will send the message that we are unified and it's an orderly transition of power and we are unified going forward in spite of this tragic occurrence. It was I understand that he was the one that insisted on it.
Yeah, because he understood the power of the media and he knew what the image was that he had to project. But also, he knew who the first 12 people were that he needed to call up immediately and talk to. And that's really fascinating, right? Mm-hmm. He understood all the wheels within the wheels in power because of he was there since the 1930s in Congress. You know, he was a big Roosevelt man. That's how he got his first House seat.
Yes.
And of course, you know, he's the one that introduced the concept of how important it was to have money to support other congressmen. Mm-hmm. And he really won the election for the Democrats back in, let's see, that would have been in like the 1950s mm-hmm. by raising money for other congressmen. So they were beholden to him. And then all of a sudden,
they learn well.
You see his rise to power is got to have Lyndon on your side because, you know, when you're in a tough election, he's going to come up with the money for you.
Yeah, it's some fascinating story. And he could be very crude, very, very crude. I mean, can't relay all of the stories. We're on radio here.
Oh, we'll be here forever.
and also probably be getting a call from Rocco up the line there saying, what are you doing? Because we don't have a 7-second bleep here, do we?
We do.
Okay, that's good.
Jump.
Yeah, he's he was a fascinating guy, and you could, if we were off the air, you could say some really, tell some very colorful stories about LBJ. But he's a fascinating guy, and he died, I believe, in 72 or 73, within a few weeks of Harry Truman. They both died within a few weeks of each other. Going back, Truman is just always somebody. It always, sometimes it takes a reading a book, a good book, and McCullough is one of the best writers, biographers around, to really get somebody and to understand them. Otherwise, they're just a name in history books to you. But we've only had 45 presidents, and I think everybody really should know all 45, and most Americans don't.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I'm reading the book on Grant now, and there's such a contrast in Grant between the general and his success on the battlefield. And as a president, he didn't get it. He didn't understand politics at all. And he kind of came in and thought he was going to run the government as a general, and it does not work.
Well, during this, it doesn't. And during the Civil War, although Ike did a very good job, I thought, as president after a distinguished career in the Army, but during the Civil War, it's a document. In fact, the South had many greater generals than the North did, for whatever reason, and they were outgunned money wise and manpower wise. But Grant was one. Grant, Chamberlain, Joshua Chamberlain. There were a few exceptions as far as leadership in the Northern Army. Grant was one of them. But reports got back to President Lincoln that the guy was a drinker. And one day Lincoln said to them, "Well, judging by the results of all my other generals, they ought to start drinking too." So Lincoln had a sense of humor, to go along with his leadership skills. But again, Grant is a fascinating guy too, because of the fact that he just did not have the presidential record that he had as a general.
Yeah. No, he didn't have the skill set for it, which is really fascinating. He didn't have an understanding of it.
Jobs are very different. Being in the legislature is very different from being a governor, right, or a mayor. Lots of people have done it and pulled it off, done very well. Other people don't like it. You have to know ahead of time. These are very different roles. The military to public life and elected office, very different. Very, very different. But as I said, Ike pulled it off. Goes down as a very good president. Probably underrated in many cases. And it's funny, Kennedy did not have that much respect for the former president, his predecessor, Dwight Eisenhower. And then he met him before he became president, and his perception changed a little bit. But Kennedy had not, and a lot of people, I think with time, Ike's stature has grown and people really have appreciated him. Sometimes it takes 30 years, as historians judge, to give a 30-year time period before you can really assess a presidency. Because you have to see sometimes how the policies worked out. And what looks good now may not be good tomorrow, and vice versa. So,
but I think it goes back to, you have to look at what the challenges were before that president at that point in time. And Ike really was over a period of time where the country was expanding after the Second World War. There was incredible prosperity. We're putting in the infrastructure system, the Eisenhower system for the highways.
Yeah.
The biggest questions there were probably, what are you doing with Korea? That was the biggest problem, right? And that started on Truman's watch. And again, you go back to, we got this insidious Cold War that's really starting up. But that is really starting up once you know that the Russians have the ability to put missiles into outer space. That's the problem. So I think so often we don't spend time with the presidents that just didn't have a major crisis in front of them.
No, and thank God for the ones who didn't, because it means things were okay. But when people are tested, that's where, if you got a great leader, boy, you're lucky. Because if you get tested and you don't have somebody with those skill sets, you're going to have some difficulties. So a great discussion on that. We have somebody in line, but we're going to go to a break first, and we will be back with the next segment of Camillo's Corner in a few moments.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Winter weather advisory through 10 o'clock this morning. Freezing rain, freezing drizzle, changing to rain, showers and ending, remaining mostly cloudy today. 35 to 40, mostly clear, breezy, 15 to 20 tonight. Mostly sunny, low 30s tomorrow, and considerable clouds Wednesday. Snow developing, 30 to 35. Thursday, freezing rain, becoming rain, then ending, becoming partly sunny during the afternoon, 37 to 43. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackwoman on 1490 WGCH.
Do you have boxes of old, deteriorating VHS tapes, film reels, photo albums, and slide carousels at home that you haven't preserved to digital yet? Everpresent, local family's top choice for digitizing, is making it easy to finally get this project done by coming right to your door. They're visiting homes and offices throughout the Fairfield County area from February 27th to March 1st, offering complimentary pickups for aging home movies and photos. This family-owned business will transport everything to their local lab and use the best technology to make your family legacy safe and shareable for generations to come. DVD, USB, and private family sharing links available. Visit everpresent.com or call 866-363-3351 to reserve a home pickup on February 27th, 28th, or March 1st. That's everpresent.com or 866-363-3351 to get this important project taken care of for good.
You know when you have about a billion things to do today, and then you realize you're out of whatever it is that you really need, and next day shipping isn't going to cut it because you really need it in like an hour. Yeah, that's when you turn to Office Depot Office Max. Buy what you need online at officedepot.com or on our app and pick it up in store for free in just 1 hour, so you can get back to whatever else is lurking on your to-do list and hurry in to save up to 40% at the furniture event. That's up to 40% off at Office Depot Office Max. Offer expires February 23rd, 2019.
This is Rick Hansen of Greenwich Library. Are you ready to escape these midwinter weeks? Then join us for the classic symphonic fairy tale, Peter and the Wolf, with the American Classical Orchestra. Maestro Thomas Crawford on the piano will narrate as he's accompanied by wind, string, and brass musicians, each portraying one of the story's colorful characters. The presentation includes a complete performance along with interactive, educational segments for the audience. While all grades are welcome, this program is best suited for grades K through 3. Peter and the Wolf with the American Classical Orchestra is presented by the Greenwich Arts Council in association with the Ashforth Children's Concert Series of Greenwich Library. Join us on Saturday, February 23rd from 2 to 3 p.m. in the Cole Auditorium. Open our online calendar to locate the registration form or call 622-7910. Make a point to visit Greenwich Library. We'll help you get what you're looking for. I'm Rick Hansen of Greenwich Library on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
WGCH. Okay, we're back as we hear the Hartford Whalers theme in the background, and it's very appropriate that we have a hockey player on the line. Good morning, Tommy Warshak.
Freddie.
How are you? How are you, Tom?
Hey. Can't hear you, Fred. How are you?
Pretty good, Tom. Pretty good. Thanks for calling in.
No problem. I was calling to talk about the clear cutting that was that happened along 95 about 2 weeks ago. And, I'm all for maintenance and, keeping the highway safe. But the responses that, are coming from the state don't seem to add up because, there were some trees, I'm sure, that were dead or had some limbs that were dead, and those needed to be taken down. But basically, from what I saw in driving by over the last week or so, they just went from the edge of the highway, put a line up and said, all right, every single tree that is 30 feet from the highway, we're cutting down. Now, there's a lot of trees that were maybe 10, 15, 20 feet, tall. They didn't need to be taken down. And for the people that live along 95, it was a total injustice. It took away a natural barrier in terms of noise, light pollution, and just the aesthetics. And it's not fair that the state can just go in arbitrarily and do it. And like I said, I'm all for tree trimming. I have no problem with that. But when they just go in and say everything from the edge of the road up 30 feet, cut it down, and then have no plan to replant or put up a noise barrier that other parts have, like Darien, Norwalk, Fairfield, Westport, and it's outside of the one area by Belhaven, there's no barriers in Greenwich, and that's not right. It's not right, and something needs to be done.
Regarding the barriers, and I'll get to the trees in a second, but 10 years ago when I got up to Hartford, I asked about that, and we were told there was no money in the budget, and right after the Great Recession. So I said, well, how come we just put some up in Darien? And the answer was that was 3 years ago in the budget, and it's just coming to fruition now, which I understand. The tree cutting is interesting because I've seen that for the last couple of years in other parts of the state, and it's still going on, especially in 91. There's been, as you said, you can cut down along the edge of the highway. I get that. It's a public safety issue. But they've gone down far away and into gullies, far off the road, and clear cut everything, which were, when you were driving down 91 to Hartford, you'd have a beautiful green barrier. You wouldn't even know there was a highway on the other side. Now you see clear through, which is, it's really made a huge difference in a negative way. DOT, Connecticut DOT, has always been, in my 10 years, great to work with. They've been proactive. They've let us know whenever they're doing projects. Whenever I have had a constituent have an issue and has called me, I've been able to get it resolved more often than not and very quickly. The only time that we don't get notices before is usually when it comes to trees. And it's, I don't know why, but I suspect because it gets controversial like it is now. So I did call up last week or 2 weeks ago and asked for a meeting and the request that they be replanted. The response was, well, we don't have any plans to replant anything, but we'll get back to you on the meeting. Then they got back and said, well, we can meet with you up in New Haven. And I replied that it would be better here to meet at one of the venues here where the trees have been cut down. So I last night sent them some venues where we can meet later this week or early next week. So that, while that's being done, and we'll continue to press the case for them.
I can't hear you. I lost you.
Well, we'll continue to press the case there for them to come down here and to replant. I did reach out to one of the nonprofits here that would possibly and is interested in replanting, putting trees in along on the town side. So that would be very another way to deal with the problem is if the town allows the nonprofit to put some trees in on our side of the fences there. So that and they're very interested. So I'm hopeful that at some point you'll get some screening back along the highway, and also knowing that in a few months the trees that were left up will have some leaves on them, so it won't be as bad. But we'd like to get some of these trees that were taken out, have something planted there that would take the place of them and provide some screening for you. So, Tom, I don't know if you're back on, but if you're not, we lost you. Sorry about that, but thank you for calling in. Tom, are you there? Okay, I think we lost Tommy. All right, but anyway, Tom Worship, thank you for calling in today. That's been a big issue, been all up and down the highway on both sides, now northbound and southbound. So I will hopefully be meeting, like I said, later this week or early next week with DOT, but also with one of the nonprofits here that has enthusiastically responded and said they'd be very interested in donating trees.
Yeah, that's the way to go. I mean, what I'm struck by is a generality, and that is change is hard, especially if you don't know what the change is or when it's coming, and you don't have a vision for what it's going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if there was a plan where you're going to repopulate with certain trees, it's going to look more aesthetic going forward, then you have a different reaction. But when people just see change and they don't know where it's going, I think that's very difficult to accept and understand.
Sure, especially now with all the uncertainty with taxes and a stagnant real estate market in many, many areas of the market, not all of them, but and tolls on the horizon and lots of things. People, you know, they're looking at the home values and they're getting nervous.
They're busy over there.
Yeah, they're very nervous. And you know, speaking of that, the governor is going to give an address on his budget address on Wednesday. I had the opportunity and the pleasure to spend my Valentine's night with him and many others at the governor's mansion. I was one of the last ones there. It was, I think, 5 to 7:30, and I got there at 6:15 because I actually had public hearings all day long and went back to my office to do some work. And as I was walking in, there was about four legislators walking out, but I was surprised there was still about 25 in there. And as I walked into the governor's mansion, I heard, "Freddie, where the hell you been?" And I look up, and I thought it was one of my colleagues. It was the governor. He was very, very nice and friendly and open. And I noticed right away what a difference between him and Dan Malloy sure. as far as personality.
Yeah.
You may not agree with the governor, but he seems like he's open to dialogue, so you're going to be open to dialogue.
I think he has a positive outlook on life.
He does.
And he conveys that.
Yeah, he does, and so it's appreciated. And certainly, I think he's doing this, and he could be doing other things too with his life. And I give him a lot of credit. So while we may not agree on tolls and things like that, the invitation and the gesture I think was well received by all of us, and it was nice just to hang out. And we really didn't even talk. We joked a little bit about politics, but we didn't talk policy.
Well, let's go there for a moment. What do you anticipate him to say or do come Wednesday?
Well, he's going to say that he's had a change of heart now and he wants tolls, which you kind of knew that was going to happen.
Okay.
He's going to introduce sin taxes. Now, I don't like any form of taxes, but some of these things I'm not losing sleep over. Sugar tax on sugar drinks, which is what – or sugary drinks, as they call them, is what Bloomberg did in New York. Not a fan of that because where does that end? But I do know that sugar is one of the worst things in the world for you, so not losing sleep over it, but
right.
I'd rather other methods and ways to get revenue, which is to me through growth and business and jobs. But he wants to do that. He wants to go down that direction. Tax on bags.
Do you think he's going to come out on legalizing marijuana?
He's already come out in favor of that. Okay. So, but the ironic thing is, the Democrats are having trouble getting all the votes on that. So they may not have the votes. At least they didn't about a month ago. They were worried about that. They're still counting right. votes.
You think he's going to address this idea that was floated to combine smaller school districts?
That I'm not sure. I do know he will talk about the sin taxes. He will talk about tolls. He will probably talk about marijuana. I'm sure he'll get to everything, but that's what's been leaked so far.
Right.
So we'll see. It's going to be interesting. I think also that the Progressive Caucus, which I was like 44 in the House, so there's almost a majority there. They're happy with some things, but they're not happy with others, and they certainly they don't like the fact that. You know, there's this movement to get the estate tax off the books, the gift tax off the books. So I think they're going about it the wrong way. I think the governor thinks they're going about it the wrong way. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be interesting how that dynamic plays out within his own party. Because it's not just a Republican philosophy versus the governor. He has to deal with his own progressive, which at times can be on the far left on some issues.
Well, it's the same everywhere, Freddie. You got to build a coalition. You got to have at least something that's got enough weight of multiple voices to come together. Otherwise, you end up in a very tough place, even if you succeed.
No, I agree. And I think people sometimes don't look at it from other people's perspective or world perspectives or worldviews. You know, everybody, all our districts, a lot of them are very different. You know, you can go into a more of a rural district in Connecticut, and you know, it's, you talk about anything, any type of gun restriction, they'll just go crazy. But in the suburbs here, it's considered something that's it's a widely held belief. You know, you need strong gun laws, and you need, so very, very different. It cuts across party line. It's more regional and cultural. So they're very different, and that's why, you know, you go up there and it gets interesting to see, as you said, you need to build coalitions, and the very good ones are successful at it. Other ones who are not good at building coalitions have more trouble.
Right.
So we'll see. But that is Wednesday, and so we will be up there to see what the governor has to say. So it's 10:47. We're going to take one more break before we come back with a wrap-up of this week's Camillo's Corner.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Winter weather advisory till 10 o'clock this morning. Freezing rain, freezing drizzle ending as rain showers remaining mostly cloudy today, 35 to 40. Mostly clear, breezy tonight, 15 to 20. And mostly sunny, low 30s tomorrow. On Wednesday, considerable clouds, snow developing near 32, then freezing rain on Thursday, becoming rain, ending, becoming partly sunny during the afternoon, 37 to 43. Instead of slipping and sliding this winter, float your way to Long Island, New York, aboard the Port Jeff Ferry. There's never any snow drifts or black ice on Long Island Sound. Call the Port Jeff Ferry at 888-443-3779. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackman on 1490 WGCH.
I want to keep my heart healthy, so I get my cholesterol checked regularly. And when my doctor told me my cholesterol was borderline, I found Garlic. According to my pharmacist, there's an ingredient in garlic that helps maintain healthy cholesterol. And one Garlic tablet is equal to a whole clove of garlic, except it's odor-free. Yep, I'm doing what I can for my cholesterol, and I'm doing it with Garlic.
Garlic, cholesterol's natural enemy. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed.
With Zillow, you're not just looking for a house. You're looking for the pool that will turn your kids' fingers into prunes. The living room where your dad will explain the nuances of football to you. Yet again. The kitchen where you'll alphabetize your spice collection and discover forgotten, furry, what is that, in the back of the fridge.
You're not just looking for a house. You're looking for a place for your life to happen. And whether buying or renting, Zillow makes it easy with smart search features, photos, and more. Zillow. Find your way home.
And now today's Bob Evans foodie lesson, the need to belong. We tend to associate certain foods with members of our family, social gatherings, and people taking care of us, Thanksgiving and other holidays with family. When we feel lonely, we crave comfort foods to give us both comfort and security. For example, a college student away from home for the first time may crave comfort foods as a reminder of family. Evidence showed that people with positive family relationships were more likely than others to reach for comforting foods on the days they felt lonely. And now a word from Bob Evans.
You're the family chef, but with homework, practices, email, getting a good meal on the table is tough. Sometimes the best choice is the easy choice. Delicious Bob Evans mashed potatoes and mac and cheese, made with ingredients like real milk, butter, potatoes, and cheese. Bob Evans sides are ready in the microwave in 6 minutes, and they're the perfect complement to any meal. Once your family tries them, it'll be love at first bite. Get Bob Evans sides today in the refrigerated section at your favorite grocery store.
Bob Evans down on the farm.
Hi, I'm Lisa Wexler. Join us every weekday on this station between 4 and 6 o'clock p.m. Hey, if you're thinking about it, we're talking about it. We're listening to what's happening in our community, and we want to hear from you as well. We talk politics, science, and the arts. We consult with experts, and we want your opinion. So join us every weekday. I'm Lisa Wexler right here at 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Alrighty, we are back for the final few moments of this week's Camillo's Corner. And this past weekend, Joe and Noah, I went to see They Shall Not Grow Old, the Peter Jackson movie about World War One, where he colorized the films and brought in people who can lip read, and then had people from the regions where the soldiers are from in England do the voiceover, so it sounded very much like them. And then everything was just the way they spoke that would be unique to that area. So it really sounded real. And it was almost as if the films were taken yesterday. And he did something I've never seen before. After the movie, he said, if you want to stay after the credits, we're going to, for 30 minutes, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the movie and how I made it, which we did. And it was fascinating to see. And he explained a lot of the, like, there was one scene I stuck in my mind, and he talked about it, which is they were in this trench that he revisited later, and it showed at the end. It still kind of looks the same way it did in France. And in the picture and in the film footage, the footage in the movie, there was this one young boy, and they're all young, but this one, and he was looking at the camera. Because remember, it was kind of weird to have somebody filming a camera back then, you know, a projector and taking. And this kid looked terrified. And after the movie and the documentary, Peter Jackson was saying that he referenced that shot. And he said that you remember the terrified look on the faces, and particularly this one kid. He said most, if not all, of them were in the last 30 minutes of their lives, because everybody who ran out of that trench died.
Right.
So the look of terror was for good reason.
Yeah.
And also some of the shots were graphic. Different time, lots of people smoking, but joking around. I mean, faces that you would, you know, you could easily see that could be your grandfather, your great-grandfather, even though this was, you know, not in our country. That was, as Peter Jackson said after, it doesn't matter where you're from, you should look at your family history, because the pretty good chance that you had somebody who fought in that war and went through those same things. And it was eye-opening, because it's often a forgotten war, World War One.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I went. It was a great movie.
Did he discuss why he wanted to make this film?
He did. I have to remember. Remember, it was late. No, I dozed off a little bit a couple times, but I was pretty good for most of it. But he was a World War One buff. He did follow it a lot. He had a grandfather. He had his grandfather there. He had his uncle there, and he dedicated the movie to them. And I think somebody came to him with the idea. And so, of course, having followed it, he had to get all these films. And he even saved some old illustrated books of World War One. He thought he had a few, and he ended up having like 400 of them. And he incorporated some of them in, because back then they didn't have, all these films weren't available. They were out, but yeah, No one knew where to give. They were even around, yeah, for the most part. And so they would go off of these sketches, illustrations. Right. So he incorporated a lot of those into him too, but it's certainly and the music was of that era. So it definitely, go see it if you get a chance. It's definitely you don't have to be a history buff,
right?
But it's certainly fascinating, and it's now 100 years ago.
Yeah, it's amazing.
One century.
Yeah, you know, and I think about, when you're talking about that, the power of government. It's just amazing, right? I mean, I don't think any of those young people on either side of those trenches, they don't want to fight this war.
No.
Nobody wants to fight a war. It's the governments that say we're doing this. And that's really a very bad place to be, why, at least for myself. I mean, I want limited government power. I don't want to see this power of government that can kill and destroy people's lives.
Sure.
For what purpose? You know, those are really important issues. I saw a different movie while you were seeing that one. I saw Cold War. And this is about after the Second World War, and it starts in Hungary. And the premise of the movie is people that are on the arts side of nature go out into the countryside and interview the peasants, their songs, their poetry, their dancing. and they pull together a Hungarian troupe of young people to perform and keep this tradition going. And then after they get to a certain level of talent, you can see where the communist government comes in and says, now we're turning this into propaganda machine. And then it takes off from there. So it's a little bit of a Romeo-Juliet story, but underlying it all is you can see how communism crushes people and how mm-hmm. corrupt it is. Because to survive in this system, what you do in terms of betraying mm-hmm. other people in order for you to get ahead. I mean, this is a very powerful movie, Cold War. Definitely would see it.
Yeah, that's good. I hope people do go see it because I think people take for granted our system, warts and all, how superior it is to communism. I'm glad we're getting these movie reviews because I don't go to the movies that much, but I kind of miss it.
It's a powerful instrument, emotionally, yeah. visually, intellectually.
Well, get you out of the powerful. House, too. I mean, yeah. we're so used to staying in with cable and computers and, you know, it's all great, but, you know, the nights out really are, you know, they've gone away, and it's not it's nice to be able to just get out.
Now, on that theme of getting out, I want to share something with you, Freddie and Noah. I went down to New York City, and I went to the 9/11 Memorial, and I had not been there before. And what an outstanding experience. Everyone should go down and take a tour. Make sure you get someone to talk to you for an hour as you walk through the museum. And just the history, the insight, the little vignettes of what happened. It's very, very powerful. I'm so glad I did it.
I still haven't done it.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
And you've done it?
I've done twice.
Really?
Yeah. Did it, I think it was now a couple months ago, and my family and I, we took a trip. My dad lost his best friend there, so we took a family trip down there too, and a few times now. Saw kind of the progression, but obviously, yeah, now that the final product is over there, I mean, it's remarkable. And you know what? It's kind of nice, too, to kind of take that, you know, touristy approach of what really is right here in our backyard, too, you know, for what is history also.
Yeah, and it would be something for a contrast for me because I was there down there right after it and then a few months later. So it was I have a very different visual of it. You know, I mean, I've seen pictures, obviously, on TV, but
I think, as you know, I worked there, and I had a very hard time getting my bearings. And so when I saw the memorial, which is actually the footings of the North Tower and the South Tower, I had a better feeling for it. But when I was there, of course, it was elevated. You used to walk up to the plaza between the towers. And now it's more at ground level. So that just for me was really eerie. But it's very strange. I used to work on the 65th floor in the South Tower and was there for the first bombing and remember walking down and what that was about. So it was a very emotional experience.
I did not go down. In 93.
93, yeah. And actually they memorialized the six people who died from that also now in the
garage.
In the garage from that bombing.
I remember I watched that. I was in Atlanta, Georgia for a wedding or Athens, but I was in Atlanta that day at CNN headquarters and watched it on TV.
Yep.
I was touring CNN, and it was going on at that moment. So can't believe it's 26 years ago now. But anyway, we are getting the hook for this week's Camillo's Corner. Great show.
It was great. Good discussion.
Okay, well, looking forward again to next week. Thanks, Joe Pellegrino, Noah, and Teddy, who is the presidential leader this week. See you, everybody.
You're listening to the station you grew up with, 1490 WGCH, Greenwich.
Treason. Conclusion. I'm Christopher Cruz.